This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, last Wednesday, after several weeks negotiation, a new German government was announced. Angela Merkel was for 16 years really synonymous with German political power, and no one paid much attention to anybody else. Now there is a new coalition. It's a three-party coalition between the Social Democrats, the Greens, and a free market, the Liberals, which really are a free market party, and you would think they might not be compatible with their other partners in government. But Germany is a hugely important country, fourth largest economy in the world and the most powerful of all the European countries. Most people agree. We're joined now from Berlin by John Kampfner, who is a journalist and an author. His book, Why the Germans Do It Better, Notes from a Grown-Up Country, is a superb way to learn about Germany. He is one of the most distinguished British journalists of his generation. And it's a pleasure to welcome him to The Stand. John, after Merkel's dominance, it will be strange, it seems, to have this new government. Will they derive their authority from where?
Yeah, well, hi there, Eamon. Great to be back talking to you and from Berlin. It's a strange old time. I mean, in many ways, this should be an occasion for great optimism. The three parties that had to negotiate did negotiate, as you say. They did it for 2 months, which might sound a long time, but in German standards, that was actually incredibly efficient. Nothing leaked. They all seemed to get on reasonably well with each other, even though the political and ideological differences between the three parties are quite immense. And so that's a sort of testament to the sort of deliberative nature of German politics that I write about a lot and hugely respect. So the process was really, really good. There was no crisis in terms of governance in those 2 months. Angela Merkel stuck around. She's not going to be allowed to stay until December the 17th. Not that she particularly might want to, but that's the date when, if she had still been chancellor, she would have overtaken Helmut Kohl and become the longest serving post-war German chancellor. But next week, she'll be off. Olaf Scholz, the new chancellor, will be in. And as I say, it should be a time for great sort of celebration. But as with every country in the world, there is the alarming specter of the pandemic to deal with, and yes, that will be items 1 to 10 on Scholz and his ministers' desks from day one.
Yes, because quite apart from the health implications, it has massive economic implications, and that matters everywhere.
It has implications also beyond that. It has implications in terms of social unrest.
Yes.
You'll have seen the demonstrations in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in other countries. There's been some in Germany too, vaccine deniers and people refusing to get themselves vaccinated, denying the virus, regarding it as all a big sort of Bill Gates style conspiracy. Germany's only, it's sort of just below the European average at about 30% of people not being vaccinated. If you look at France, they had an incredibly high figure of non-vaccinated people. President Macron just said, right, I've had enough. You're not going to be able to work in state organizations if you're not vaccinated. He encouraged companies to require employees to do so, totally beefed it all up. And the evidence there is that the vast majority of people who haven't been vaccinated were sort of never really kind of got around to it or didn't regard it as important. It wasn't ideological. So the numbers have really bounced up in France. And a lot of people around Scholz are saying that's just the kind of thing he absolutely has to do on day one.
Is he a leader, John? He's been around. He's been mayor of Hamburg, I think, twice. He's held ministries, including the finance ministry, I think. He's been around German politics a long time. Is he a leader or is he a consensus person?
It's fascinating. During the election campaign, and everybody had been writing the obituaries of the Social Democrats, this sort of great wave around Europe of the center-left, not quite coming to grips with sort of life after the financial crash and the rise of populism. And everybody thought the SPD were over. And remarkably, Scholz turned it around. It wasn't a huge victory. It was much more a defeat for the others than a victory.
Yes.
Than a victory for him. He got just around 26%, which is amazing considering what people were predicting, but it's still much lower than historic averages for what is Europe's oldest political party. So he got in pretty much by saying absolutely nothing. He waited for the CDU, Merkel's party, and their absolutely hapless candidate, a soon-to-be-forgotten guy by the name of Armin Laschet, to implode. The Greens, in the name of Annalena Baerbock, now to be the foreign minister, didn't do particularly well, went below expectations. And Scholz just sort of snuck in there in the middle by saying virtually nothing. Now, people thought, well, that was a really smart tactic. But when they announced last week the formation of the coalition, he was surrounded by the other two parties, as he should be, the Greens and the Liberal FDP. But their two leaders, Christian Lindner, who is going to be the finance minister, and Robert Habeck, the co-leader of the Greens, who's taking on this beefed up economics and climate change department, they pretty much dominated the press conference. So you've got this sort of, and they're both sort of taller and bulkier than Scholz. So you have this sort of Delphic, diminutive, bald guy in the middle saying absolutely nothing. Now people around him say, well, you might think that, but he will prove you wrong. He's got steel in his eyes, and whether it is bringing the other two parties to heel or dealing with the likes of Putin or Xi Jinping, don't underestimate him.
Yes. Now, I'm interested in the Greens and Annalena Baerbock, who is going to be the first woman foreign minister for Germany.
Yeah.
And she has a big issues to deal with, in particular, the EU-China trade deal, which is very controversial, which many people believe shouldn't go ahead. And there are indications that this coalition in Germany will not be so keen to do it. And that is a big deal, isn't it?
So the 177-page coalition agreement has a fair amount to say on foreign policy. And it does make a point of emphasizing the priority on human rights in a way that the previous one in Merkel's last administration didn't do that. It also explicitly mentions Ukraine, which is the eastern parts of which have been invaded by pro-Russian forces and is deeply threatened by Russia. And it mentions Taiwan, the absolute bête noire
Yes.
Of China. So on a number of fronts, there is the implication that we Germans are going to get tougher because we know that you, and you probably the Americans and others too, think that we were too quiescent and too ready to try to seal deals with dictatorships and authoritarians around the world, particularly China. So the EU trade deal, which was signed just around Christmas, New Year, coming up for a year ago, just as Biden was about to be inaugurated, but not quite, absolutely infuriated the incoming US administration. It was seen as an absolute poke in the eye, and the timing was particularly bad. That has been put on hold. I would be quite surprised if it sees the light of day, certainly in this form. And the other hyper-controversial symbol, well, it's more than a symbol, specific decision, is the gas pipeline with Russia.
Yes.
Nord Stream 2. And that has recently, in the last couple of weeks, been suspended on so-called technical grounds by one of Germany's many sort of bureaucratic organizations. Now, is that a genuine technical issue, or does that give cover for the incoming government to abandon it? If it did that, it would be an enormous decision because the pipeline's pretty much finished and they're ready to press the button for huge amounts of cubic meters of Russian gas to come straight into Europe all the time. But, you know, we've seen with energy shortages recently the speed with which the Russians are ready to play politics with energy. People think it was crazy of Merkel to agree to something brokered by her predecessor, Gerhard Schröder, who's very much in the pocket of the Kremlin, to something that sort of makes not just Germany, but Western Europe hostage to the Kremlin. So we'll see how that one plays out, and we'll see how relations with the Biden administration play out. There's lots of talk about the Transatlantic Alliance, about NATO, but also about disarmament and the sort of continuing sort of anti-nuclear feel of the Greens and other parties as well.
Now, if you look at the world geopolitically, the instability and the threats really are clear. Europe is under threat. There's a possibility, and maybe some believe a probability, John, that Donald Trump has not gone away and may be back. There is the pressure on the EU at the borders, Lithuania, Poland, of course, and the future looks uncertain for Europe as well, because Macron wants increased integration. He wants a more federal Europe, and I believe Germany, well, I'm guessing that they do. Is that the case? And the real question I have for you is about this rather odd coalition being able to make hard decisions.
Well, the proof of that, I mean, I know this sounds a rather sitting on the fence answer, but it just happens to be true. You know, the proof of the pudding, is in the eating. We will see how they deal with things literally from next week. They have absolutely pledged, they're fully aware, all three parties, that they will stand or fall on the performance of the government. That sort of nitpicking isn't going to work. And lowest common denominator, oh, we can't do that because the other two don't agree, isn't going to work either. And they made all of that abundantly clear. So that's the theory, that they're going to have to take hard choices, compromises, certain government ministries, and pretty much parties are assigned ministries and then they own them. It's not like they're divvied up within ministries. You have the whole thing. So you'll see the stamp. The Greens absolutely want a much more thorough move away from coal towards renewables, a much greener country. And Germany used to be the sort of outstanding country in the last 5 or 10 years, has lost its way on that. So it's got ground to make up, and they're going to be determined to do that. The Social Democrats want a lot of social reform, increased minimum wage, pensions, all that kind of thing. And the Liberals want to make sure that nobody spends too much. Now, of course, there are tensions in all of that. But they know that on the big issues, you know, domestically, it's about modernizing Germany because so much of the economy feels stuck in almost in the last century. So, you know, digitalization, it still feels quite an analog, an old-fashioned country, but they're very, very aware of the need to do that. And in foreign policy, there is a sort of sense, yes, that maybe Joe Biden is simply keeping the seat warm, and that in January 2025, either Trump himself or someone like Trump,
perhaps worse.
And you know, the cleverer the person, the worse it will be, because at least you know they know how Trump behaves and misbehaves. But it's a very threatening atmosphere. You've got climate, as I say. You've got the pandemic. You've got Trump, the threat of China. What happens with Taiwan? And it's always been my contention that Germany needs to step up and to become a much bigger player. Now, within Europe, Macron has been trying to persuade the Germans, particularly since the Brits have left, that those two really need to mold a new kind of Europe. It needs to be more fiscally harmonized, but it also needs in foreign policy to be more distinct. And he calls it strategic autonomy. Now, Merkel was a bit queasy about it. The issue is, you know, particularly with the Americans looking away from Europe, much more seeing China as its top priority and its pivot towards Asia, which actually Barack Obama presaged many years ago, that the Europeans do need to step up, but also to harmonize. But it's incredibly difficult to do because within the 27 countries, you've got Hungary, you have Poland, and others who absolutely are causing trouble at every turn, ingratiating themselves with the Chinese, being authoritarian at home on press freedoms, and judicial freedoms, and that kind of thing. And you have the refugee wave between the dictatorship in Belarus, which has been bringing in Iraqis, Afghans, Syrians, and others, using them as sort of human fodder on the border, on the external border of the EU, Poland trying to push them back, but at the same time, Poland on the other side having terrible relations with Germany and not wanting Germany's help. So again, there are all these absolutely crucial issues that need to be addressed within days, if not weeks.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, the federal system in Germany, how much is delegated from the center to the regions and to the states? And does that weaken a government, John, in terms of the other big issues you just mentioned, the weakness of the EU, the relationship with China, and indeed with Russia?
It doesn't in foreign policy terms, because that is very much a federal government, a national government jurisdiction. The jurisdictions are very clear, what is devolved and what is retained. Not hugely dissimilar to, say, the UK government's relationship with Scotland. Health, education, those issues are devolved to the regions. Now, the most people regard the constitutional settlement dating back to 1949, as I do, as an incredibly good document. It's really clear, and a separation of powers within administration, within the executive, is also incredibly clear and, I think, beneficial. The problem has been exposed by the pandemic, which is that the national government has not been able to introduce measures as quickly, you know, within hours as it might have done, because it has to convene all 16 states to agree. And they all have different party allegiances and types of coalitions. So one thing that Scholz is doing is bringing in a crisis staff into his chancellery. And I think you're going to see a much clearer, this is what we're doing approach, rather than waiting for the 16th state to agree, because Germany's response has sometimes been cumbersome. And I think he'll get that through, because there is a real sense now that things are drifting here, and the COVID situation and the numbers are, you know, case numbers have increased fourfold since the start of this month, November, which is an extraordinary increase. And Germany has just gone over the 100,000 deaths, which is incredibly sad. It's still way below the UK's, even with the UK's smaller population.
Yes.
But the rate of increase in Germany is alarming, and now we have the new variant, which is causing, again, within days, it could happen even before the new government takes in. The outgoing government could introduce restrictions today or in any subsequent day.
Now, John, the question of the economy and how you reconcile the beliefs of the Free Democrats. Christian Lindner is their leader. He seems to be the most charismatic of the leaders. He loves fast cars, apparently. And how can he reconcile his belief in balanced budgets and no increases in taxes with the issues that Scholz, as Chancellor, will have to deal with economically, even after the pandemic? Can they reconcile that?
You may well ask. For some time now, for a decade or so, Germany has a thing called the debt brake, which is it can only borrow up to a certain amount. And that has been enshrined into the constitution, which means it can only be overturned with a two-thirds majority of both houses of parliament. There are ways of getting around that, though, of redesignating debt, passing some of spending to arm's length agencies and that kind of thing. They're all being mooted. I mean, Lindner is your classic small state, free market party, wants tax cuts rather than tax rises, and very much sort of pro-innovation, entrepreneurship, which Germany desperately needs. And there is, you know, they got around 13%, 14%, 15%, which I think does demonstrate, and they're particularly popular among the young, as the Greens are, this sort of come on, Germany, join the real world type approach. We can't be constantly featherbedded. So it's a not insignificant approach. Yet set against that are spends that Germany desperately needs. As I say, huge investments in renewables, and in other ways of offsetting emissions and further climate damage, alongside some terrible infrastructure, which has been allowed to atrophy over the last several years. The trains, a lot of transport is, in by German standards at least, in pretty shabby state, along with a whole process around broadband speeds and digitalization. So not even taking into account the biggest spend of all, as in all countries, which is welfare and pensions, in aging populations. And as with most of the West, Germany has an aging population. And that sort of demographic time bomb, there's obviously a massive contradiction at the heart of that. And the two biggest financial ministries, the finance ministry, as you say, led by Lindner, but this economic super ministry led by the Greens co-leader, Robert Habeck, have pretty much juxtaposed approaches. But having said all of that, they do in Germany have an amazing predisposition to find consensus where they can. So I think you will have give and take. I think Lindner will absolutely get away with no increases in the top rate in top line income tax rates. But I think there will be, to use an old fashioned phrase, stealth taxes in other places and other ways of bringing in money in order to pay for what's going to be huge amounts of spending.
Now, just a final question, John, about this new coalition government's attitude towards Europe. Europe looks weak. It needs reform, particularly weak in the present geopolitical state of uncertainty about intentions of China, of the United States, of Russia, of course, as always, pushing. Where will this new coalition be in relation to the European project?
Huge amounts depends on what happens elsewhere in France next April.
Yes.
It would be just sort of Armageddon for Europe and for the world if Macron loses to either of the two far-right candidates, Eric Zemmour or Marine Le Pen.
Michel Barnier is making a bid for the right.
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much money on him. But it's very much Macron, I think, against the far right. Zemmour makes Le Pen seem like a pussycat. It will be, it will make sort of Trump and Brexit seem small by comparison, because this is right at the heart of Europe. So all bets will be off then. Assuming that doesn't happen, and I think you should be cautiously optimistic that that won't happen, then absolutely. And, Macron will be determined to, even if it is done in concentric circles, to produce an inner core of Europe that wants to drive change and to define Europe in foreign policy terms in a much stronger way. That could mean treaty revisions, that could mean all kinds of things, but very much saying to the Poles, the Hungarians, and the outriders, enough is enough. Europe needs to have a common voice and be much tougher, not to produce equidistance between America and China. Europe is still very much a transatlanticist, pro-Western, Western free, liberal democratic free market entity, whatever the authoritarians in Hungary and Poland might say. So it's not about equidistance, but it is about being a distinctive actor, which in some ways the Americans are not against. They want Europe to step up. They want Europe to step up militarily in terms of military spending and that kind of thing. But so much of European energy has been taken up with managing internal problems, those that I've mentioned, but of course the Brexit events of the last...
Of course. Yes,
not just Brexit, but managing the Brits in the years and decades prior to that. And there is a school of thoughts, which is now that our chief troublemaker is out of the way, we can actually define a new future for Europe. But it would take an enormous amount of investment of time and energy from Macron and Scholz. The problem being that, they will be able to do that if their intrays will be less busy with the likes of the pandemic. And the fear is that over the next, 18 months, that will weigh everybody down.
Will this coalition endure?
Oh, absolutely.
No. Final question, John.
Yeah, absolutely. It will. Whether in 4 years' time it will be seen as a success, whether the three participating parties will have benefited from being part of it, time will tell. The Merkel's party, which has now gone very sort of slunk into opposition, is in deep, deep crisis. It doesn't know what it stands for. It doesn't know what German conservatism stands for anymore. You have the far right snapping at its ankles the whole time. So politically, they've got some wiggle room, but they've got to really make hay, as ever with new governments, and show that they can work together and engineer change.
Okay, John, we're very grateful to you for joining us from Berlin. That's John Kampfner. John is a very distinguished journalist, and he's a very good author. His book, Why the Germans Do It Better, Notes from a Grown-Up Country, is really a pleasure to read, and it's in the shops now. It wasn't published long ago. Thanks to John. Thanks to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.